Hello again. Welcome to Touchstone, your poetry podcast. In the month of April, Australians commemorate Anzac Day. There has been controversy in recent times about even acknowledging this important part of our national identity. The protests I've heard seem to me to be based upon ignorance of our history. Spanish-born American philosopher George Santayana said in 1905, "You must understand your own history or you will be doomed to repeat it." Australia was proclaimed an independent nation in 1901 when its six states, six separate British colonies, became one federation. Yet only 13 years later, the nation became involved in the First World War, then said to be the war to end all wars. Australia's population at this time was 4.7 million. The 416,809 men who enlisted represented 38.7% of the male population aged between 18 and 44. And our nurses were not even included in that statistic. An estimated 58,961 soldiers were killed, 166,811 were wounded, 4,098 went missing or made prisoners of war, and 87,865 suffered some sort of illness. Australia's population at the outbreak of World War II was almost 7 million. 1.1 million Australians enlisted. 39,000 were killed and 30,000 taken prisoner. 121,800 were wounded, many of whom died later of their injuries. All were either mentally or physically affected for the rest of their lives. These figures come from the Australian National Archives and the Australian War Memorial. Looking at the broader picture, 10 million soldiers and 7 million civilians lost their lives in World War I across the world. In World War II, between 50 and 85 million people died, many of whom were Russian and Chinese civilians. Santayana's words, sadly, a self-fulfilling prophecy. Those who think attending Anzac Day services on April 25 glorifies war should remember that this day specifically commemorates a defeat and a withdrawal from a strategically impossible battle in the Dardanelles, which had incurred disastrous loss of Australian, New Zealander, British, Turkish, Indian, French and German soldiers and Australian nurses. Not celebrating war victory at all, Anzac Day is a time to remember the many young men and women who gave their lives for a cause they considered worthy. No Australian was conscripted into either world war. They were volunteers. Should we erase such heroism from our history books? I think not. When we speak of the war poets, we're generally referring to men and women who experienced the horror of World War I and wrote about it. People like Wilfred Owen, Rupert Brooke, Siegfried Sassoon, Vera Brittain and A.B. Paterson. Yeah, the bloke who wrote The Man from Snowy River. Wilfred Owen said of his war poetry, "It is not about heroes. English poetry is not yet fit to speak of them. Nor is it about deeds or lands, nor anything about glory, honour, might, majesty, dominion or power, except war. My subject is war and the pity of war." Dulce et decorum est pro patria mori is one of Owen's most celebrated works. Written in 1917, the title is a line from the odes of the Roman poet Horace. It means, "Sweet and proper it is to die for your country." We'll see what Owen has to say about this in his description of a deadly gas attack which occurred sometime after 1915 when the Germans released, in the first instance, clouds of poisonous chlorine at Ypres. Duce et decorum est pro patria mori, by Wilfred Owen. Bent double, like old beggars under sacks, knock-kneed, coughing like hags, we cursed through sludge, till on the haunting flares we turned our backs and towards our distant rest began to trudge. Men marched asleep. Many had lost their boots but limped on, bloodshod. All went lame, all blind, drunk with fatigue, deaf even to the hoots of gas shells dropping softly behind. Gas, gas, quick, boys! An ecstasy of fumbling, fitting the clumsy helmets just in time. But someone still was yelling out and stumbling and floundering like a man in fire or lime. Dim through the misty panes and thick green lighters under a green sea, I saw him drowning. In all my dreams, before my helpless sight, he plunges at me, guttering, choking, drowning. If in some smothering dreams you too could pace behind the wagon that we flung him in, and watch the white eyes writhing in his face, his hanging face, like a devil sick of sin. If you could hear, at every jolt, the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, obscene as cancer, bitter as the cud of vile, incurable sores on innocent tongues. My friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory the old lie, Duce et decorum est pro patria mori. In 1918, Owen wrote Strange Meeting. It's possible he had a premonition of his own death in writing this, for he was killed on November 4 of the same year, a week before the end of the war. What unspeakable loss! His mother was informed of his death a week later on what became Armistice Day. Nothing to celebrate for her. Strange Meeting by Wilfred Owen. It seemed that out of battle I escaped, down some profound, dull tunnel, long since scooped through granites which titanic wars had groined. Yet also there encumbered sleepers groaned, too fast in thought or death to be bestirred. Then, as I probed them, one sprang up and stared with piteous recognition in fixed eyes, lifting distressful hands as if to bless. And by his smile I knew that sullen hall. By his dead smile I knew we stood in hell. With a thousand fears that vision's face was grained, yet no blood reached there from the upper ground, and no guns thumped or down the flues made moan. Strange friend, I said, here is no cause to mourn. None, said the other, save the undone years, the hopelessness. Whatever hope is yours was my life also. I went hunting wild after the wildest beauty in the world, which lies not calm in eyes or braided hair, but mocks the steady running of the hour, and if it grieves, grieves richlier than here. For by my glee might many men have laughed, and of my weeping something had been left, which must die now. I mean the truth untold, the pity of war, the pity war distilled. Now men will go content with what we spoiled, or discontent boil bloody and be spilled. They will be swift with the swiftness of the tigress. None will break ranks, though nations trek from progress. Courage was mine, and I had mystery. Wisdom was mine, and I had mastery. To miss the march of this retreating world into vain citadels that are not walled. Then, when much blood had clogged their chariot wheels, I would go up and wash them from sweet wells. even with truths that lie too deep for taint. I would have poured my spirit without stint, but not through wounds, not on the cess of war. Foreheads of men have bled where no wounds were. I am the enemy you killed, my friend. I knew you in this dark, for so you frowned yesterday through me as you jabbed and killed. I parried, but my hands were loath and cold. Let us sleep now. If you haven't heard it, may I suggest you get hold of a recording of Benjamin Britten's glorious oratorio, The War Requiem, and listen to it. Have a box of tissues with you. Britten's extraordinary music is combined with Owen's extraordinary poetry as a sort of libretto, long after the poet had died, for The War Requiem was completed in 1962. Siegfried Sassoon was born into a wealthy family, so he didn't have to worry about supporting himself financially. He wrote poetry, publishing his first collection in 1906. He enlisted at the outbreak of war and was awarded a military cross for bravery on the Western Front. Wounded, he was returned to England in 1917. When he wrote to his commanding officer protesting the continuation of the war, his complaint was dismissed as neurasthenia or shell shock. Fearing that he was abandoning his men, he rejoined his regiment in 1917, returning to France in 1918. He was accidentally shot by his own sergeant, but survived the war and wrote several volumes about his wartime experiences. Suicide in the Trenches by Siegfried Sassoon. I knew a simple soldier boy who grinned at life in empty joy, slept soundly through the lonesome dark, and whistled early with the lark. In winter trenches, cowed and glum, with crumps and lice and lack of rum, he put a bullet through his brain. No one spoke of him again. You smug-faced crowds with kindling eye, who cheer when soldier lads march by, sneak home and pray you'll never know the hell where youth and laughter go. Sick Leave by Siegfried Sassoon. When I'm asleep, dreaming and lulled and warm, they come, the homeless ones, the noiseless dead. While the dim, charging breakers of the storm bellow and drone and rumble overhead, out of the gloom they gather about my bed. They whisper to my heart, their thoughts are mine. Why are you here with all your watches ended? From Ypres to Frise we sought you in the line. In bitter safety I awake, unfriended. And while the dawn begins with slashing rain, I think of the battalion in the mud. When are you going out to them again? Are they not still your brothers through our blood? Vera Mary Britten studied at Oxford, but when the war began, found her studies increasingly irrelevant. She left them to work as a nurse for much of World War I. When stationed close to the front at Etaples, she nursed German prisoners of war. Her internationalist and pacifist views were no doubt informed by this period. Britten's fiancé, brother, and two close friends were all killed in the Great War, so she found it difficult herself to adjust to life as a survivor at its end. Roundel by Vera Mary Britten. The subtitle is Died of Wounds. Because you died, I shall not rest again, but wander ever through the lone world wide, seeking the shadow of a dream grown vain because you died. I shall spend brief and idle hours beside the many lesser loves that still remain, but find in none my triumph and my pride. And disillusion's slow, corroding stain will creep upon each quest but newly tried. For every striving now shall nothing gain, because you died. I read you a poem by the wonderful Mr. Thomas Hardy in an earlier podcast. He thought of himself as a poet rather than as a novelist, was nominated 25 times for a Nobel Prize in Literature, but never actually received it. He was probably too old to go to World War I as he died in 1927, but I'm going to read The Man He Killed by Thomas Hardy. Had he and I but met by some old ancient inn, we should have sat us down to whet right many a nipperkin. But ranged as infantry, and staring face to face, I shot at him as he at me, and killed him in his place. I shot him dead because he was my foe. Just so, my foe, of course he was. That's clear enough. Although he thought he'd enlist perhaps offhand like, just as I. Was out of work, had sold his traps, no other reason why. Yes, quaint and curious war is. You shoot a fellow down, you'd treat if met where any bar is, or help to half a crown. American poet E.E. Cummings, Edward Estlin Cummings, wrote approximately 2,900 poems in his lifetime. During World War I, he was an ambulance driver and spent time in an internment camp, which became the inspiration for his novel, The Enormous Room. Here is My Sweet Old Etc. by E.E. Cummings. My sweet old etc. Aunt Lucy during the recent war could, and what is more, did tell you just what everybody was fighting for. My sister Isabel created hundreds and hundreds of socks, not to mention shirts, flea-proof ear warmers, etc., wristers, etc. My mother hoped that I would die, etc., bravely, of course. My father used to become hoarse, talking about how it was a privilege, and if only he could. Meanwhile, myself, etc., lay quietly in the deep mud, etc., dreaming, etc., of your smile, eyes, knees, and of your etc. Next is a poem which comes from World War II. It was written by H.B. Patterson, Banjo's son, who served in the AIF. See if you think he's a chip off the old block, if his stuff is reminiscent of his father's, Andrew Barton Patterson. This one is called Tobruk Test. You've heard of Bradman, Hammond, McCartney, Woodfull, Hobbs. You've heard of how McDougall topped the score. Now I'd like to tell you how we play cricket in Tobruk, in a way the game was never played before. The players are a mixture. They come from every rank, and their dress would not be quite the thing at Lord's. But you don't need caps and flannels and expensive batting gloves to get the fullest sport the game affords. The wicket's rather tricky, for it's mat on desert sand. But for us, it's really plenty good enough. And what with big bomb craters and holes from 9-inch shells, the outfield could be well described as rough. The boundary's partly tank trap, with a balance down at wire, and the grandstand's just a bit of sandy bank. While our single sightboard's furnished by a shot-down jerry plane and the scorers in a ruined eye-tight tank. One drawback is a minefield, which is at the desert end, and critics might find fault with this and that, but to us, all runs are good ones. Even if a man should score your leg-byes off the top of his tin hat. The barracking is very choice. The hill would learn a lot if they could listen in to all the cries. As the quartermaster sergeant bowls the colonel neck and crop with a Yorker, while some dust is in his eyes. And the time the signals runner scored the winning hit, when as he sprinted round the wire to try and save the four, the battery sergeant major fell into a crater deep, and the batman ran another seven more. If we drive one in the minefield, we always run it out, for that is what our local rule defines. It's always good for six at least, sometimes as high as 10, while the fieldsman picks his way in through the mines. Though we never stop for shellfire, we're not too keen on planes. But when the Stukas start to hover round, you can sometimes get a wicket, if you're game enough to stay, by bowling as the batsmen go to ground. So when we're back in Sydney and others start to talk of cricket, why, we'll quell them with a look. You blokes have never seen a game of cricket properly played the way we used to play it in Tobruk. We're going back to the First World War again now with a poem by Leon Gillert. Now, I'm hoping that I'm pronouncing his name correctly. I know the French would pronounce it Gellert because his surname is spelled G-E-L-L-E-R-T. But Leon Gillert wasn't French. He had Hungarian ancestry, I believe. And in Australia, we tend to pronounce names fairly phonetically. So I'm going to call him Leon Gillert. Apologies to people who feel that I am misnaming him. He was born in 1892 in Walkerville, a suburb of Adelaide, South Australia. He became a student teacher, then later taught at the University of Adelaide's Teacher Training College, and then enlisted with the Australian Imperial Forces. He landed at Ari Burnu Beach, Gallipoli, on April 25, 1915. He was repatriated as medically unfit in June 1916, a result of war wounds. Anzac Cove by Leon Gillert. There's a lonely stretch of hillocks, there's a beach asleep and drear, there's a battered broken fort beside the sea, there are sunken trampled graves and a little rotting pier and winding paths that wind unceasingly. There's a torn and silent valley. There's a tiny rivulet with some blood upon the stones beside its mouth. There are lines of buried bones. There's an unpaid waiting debt. There's a sound of gentle sobbing in the south. Lest we forget.